Okay.
No, now it is.
Solid light.
I'd like to call to order the Public Safety Committee meeting. It's Monday, May 8th, 2 o'clock. And I would also like to acknowledge that the press and public have been duly notified of this meeting in accordance with the Freedom of Information Act. First item of business would be approval of last month's minutes.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Any changes or additions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We'll move on to citizens' comments. You folks came up quick, didn't it?
It caught you.
You need to come over here.
If you would come up here so we can get you on the
On the microphone.
On the microphone.
I think right now, it's Jenny Pierce, Scott Pierce, and we're here to just find out a little bit about the process of bringing things to the board. We live over on 49th Avenue, and we've got some parking challenges. We've seen what we would consider near-death experiences and near property damage and congested them up to 38 cars on that one road on Carolina between Ocean and, on 9th Avenue between Carolina and Ocean. So we're here to kind of explore what some steps might be to get the parallel parking instituted over for that part of the street. And also ensure that all the parking is legal and not illegal. But we've seen quite a few instances already before the busy season where it's getting quite to be a safety issue there. So we want to find out.
But we've been working with Captain Estrey, and the chief's been kind of aware of our situation, and they're working very diligently on that. But we were kind of interested on your agenda about some of the removal of encroachments that, because we seem to be getting all of the parking now because there are encroachments elsewhere, so that might mitigate it later. But we had been told by the DOT that it was going to be parallel parking, that that's like state law. So we're trying to indeed verify that with the attorneys, the city attorneys looking at it. So we are making progress, but if...
There seems to be a lot of confusion as to what the actual rules of the road are for the state versus the town and enforcement. And
getting it all
together. We're trying to get it together, but our understanding is that from all of the representatives that we've spoken with and received documentation from with the DOT that any of the county roads, or the Department of Transportation roads, SCDOT, are parallel parking. State roads are parallel parking and not perpendicular. And the perpendicular parking on our street right now is causing the volumes to go way beyond safe capacity. And we've got
parking in all different directions. It causes hazards. People walking to the beach, they tend to walk it right down the middle of the street.
Mm-hmm.
And they have toddlers and they're behind them, and we've just
seen a lot of things because we're right there. Increasing, it's going to just get worse. And by the way, we wanted to go on the record here that we have no issue with parking on our street. We're not trying to do what others have done on 3rd through 8th, where they basically bermed and barriered such that nobody can park there. Love the surfers, but it's a safety hazard. There's no question about it. And any study between parallel and perpendicular parking will tell you parallel parking is a safer way. We got real issues on our street.
We just kind of wanted you to be aware of what we were working on and trying to make everybody be in the loop.
And it looks like you've got some agenda items that may.
Yeah, you might want to
stay listening. Sure, Captain Estrey and the chief will keep us informed.
Thank you for coming. Mr. Chairman, just to get some things on the record for clarity purposes, if I could respond to some of the things that they
absolutely
have said. I'm Linda Tucker. I'm the city administrator. And I'm sure you probably heard some of these things from Chief Buchanan and perhaps Captain Usery as well, but it is accurate that SCDOT has purview over the roads that are on the island that belong to them. And anytime the city is going to do anything on the SCDOT right-of-way, or a private citizen is going to do anything on the SCDOT right-of-way, that requires that we submit an encroachment permit and get that approval from them. So while a global statement might be made that DOT does not approve anything but parallel parking, that while some of their personnel might make that global statement, there are instances where there have been encroachment permits filed for where they have granted permission for something other than the parallel parking. And the city's parking management plan would be one of those instances where there are areas, not just in your area, but other areas where The city submitted a sign plan and a parking plan, and it was approved by SCDOT. They will also defer to the local government, that the local government has the right to regulate parking within their municipality, which of course is what our parking plan does, is regulate parking for safety reasons in the municipality. And so, you know, depending on, you know, who you call up there and talk to, my point is not because they want to, but sometimes you can get conflicting answers.
Can I respond to that?
Well, I'm really not finished, but. So that, I just want to say that because even the local government, sometimes I might call up there and say, I need to double check whether or not this road is an SCDOT road or an Isle of Palms road or a county road. And I will get a categorical, just, you know, oh, that is an SCDOT road. And then we do some research and we get back to them and we say, well, you know, could you check that again? Because, you know, and then we find out that when you delve into it a little deeper, that might not be, you know, exactly thing. Now, I'm not arguing your points about them taking a position that parallel parking might be safer or something like that. And I'm not arguing your points that there might not be problems on your street that need to be corrected. But just to make sure that we got it clear on the record, there are instances where perpendicular parking has been approved by SCDOT in encroachment permits. So while their global statement might be accurate, there are instances, not just for the city of Isle of Palms, but other instances where they have approved it. Now, has I guess it if it's up to the chair.
I'll have 2 minutes.
Well, first of all, I would be very interested in where that encroachment has been approved by SCDOT. Where it has not. We worked with SCDOT during construction. Mm-hmm. We worked with three of the representatives, so we weren't willy-nilly in calling in there to get their opinions. They sent us documentation. They confirmed that they said they escalated up through their chain of command and that they came back and said that perpendicular parking is what is supposed to be enforced on their on the street. Lastly,
no,
before
parallel.
I'm sorry, parallel. Yeah.
Wait
a minute. Yeah. I made your argument for you. Parallel is supposed to be enforced, not perpendicular. Lastly, the lot that we purchased was a jungle. There was no, they were accompanying the, you know, 8th through 3rd where everything was burned over. There was no parking. So the perpendicular parking is brand new to our lot since our construction started. All we were, and we've been, you know, everybody's told us, including some city officials that have said, encouraged us to, well, just berm out or build out and put yourself into a parallel parking situation. We have not done that. We have no plans to do that. We in fact went and got an encroachment for the plantings that we currently have that are putting a little barrier between a wall that we have and the cars. Good thing because they're coming right into the trees and into the landscape. So all we're asking is, you know, what would be the process here? The parallel parking, we're just concerned somebody's gonna get killed. Just put it out there. We don't want that to happen. We don't want anybody to get hurt. We've seen near hits of young children, couples, elderly people. We have a high traffic area. And because there is no enforcement on all these other streets, all that traffic is getting pushed to ours.
And so, Chief, which side is the parallel? I mean, is the perpendicular parking lot? Is that the eastern side or the western side of that?
It's on the Wild Dune side of the road.
So, eastern
side.
Side
of your home.
Yeah. And then the opposite, so where did we put the golf cart park?
Down the corner.
On the other side.
Oh, just the opposite side. Okay,
that's golf
good.
Cart.
And we can show you, like, trailer, these big trucks park, and their trailer hitches are right
in the road.
In the road.
We have pictures.
Know?
Yeah. 38 cars we've mm-hmm. pounded on our road. 38.
Really?
And that stretch between Ocean and Carolina.
In Carolina. That's amazing.
Because we have a deserted house across the street, they can't enforce all the time, legally, I guess. Police department can't enforce that unless the homeowner calls. Well, he's not there. So they park there and they know that they're not going to get ticketed. But like we see two people backing out and there's a cargo in the middle and, you know, so everyone's screeching to a halt. And thank goodness there's not a pedestrian in the roadway.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, we're here to listen and not, you know,
We came here to find a process. I guess we just tried to make it work.
For clarity on the process, you know, obviously anytime a safety concern is brought forward, that is of paramount importance to this committee. And
you're doing the right thing by
yes.
Kim Dyson bringing it to our attention.
Right. This definitely might be something that the, in an after action for the 2018 parking plan, that we might want to consider as to well on whether or not there should be some change on that side of the road.
I mean, everyone else is parking parallel on our side. The other neighbors have, they have a very tactful barrier with railroad ties that is on the encroachment, but it's, they've allowed 12 feet or so for the parallel parking. And so all that erosion isn't happening and it's being enforced and it looks nice, that yet it violates what you guys are asking people to take out. So there's just this, what do you do kind of thing. It's nice that they are parallel already. If we could just extend it up to Carolina, that's kind of what we're asking for.
Thank you for your comments. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And stay and listen.
We are.
Yeah.
Any other citizens' comments?
The crowds.
Thank you. We'll move on to old business. And first of all, is an update on the efforts to remove encroachments in the right-of-way. And I'll preface this by saying we're kind of moving down the island. It would be physically impossible for our folks to do everything at one time. And this is built up since the island was populated, so we're having to take an area at a time. Chief B.
All right. Right now, the Sergeant Amos is continuing to work with the property owners who have already been notified of their encroachment, and primarily it's on the north end of the island. And there is a couple on the south end of the island that he has sent out encroachment letters to. And of course, you know, we're in that time of the year when it's hard for us to really sink our teeth into anything other than the meat of the job, which is enforcing the other laws besides this one. He's recently been working with Douglas over at the building department. Working with some residents that he's got the encroachment permit letters out to. But he's not moved on to other parts of the island yet, simply because we're at that time of the year when
everything gets busy.
Yes, it's just difficult to do it at this time of the year because we're working on so many other things. But he has, like I said, got the encroachment letters out there. I think we were 53 on the last count I had, encroachment letters out there, and these are the most egregious ones. The landscape timbers, the poles, and a lot of those have already been taken up.
I was wanting to make sure you emphasize that we have had some voluntary compliance as soon as people were notified that they had encroachments. Some of these folks bought their homes and those encroachments were already there, so they were surprised to learn that they were out of compliance. So that's the real good news in this, is that we have had some that very cooperatively have immediately removed them.
Right.
Mr. Chair, I know we started at the north end of the island. I've had two people contact me, and they're saying they did their part, but others aren't. And I said, well, it's a slow process in the city and the police, and we can't tackle everything at one time, but it's got to be uniform, not just in your neighborhood, but all of Isle Palms, including the people of us who live on the backsides. So I tried to encourage him that, it's a slow process, but the city is working on it.
We will eventually get there.
Yes, we will.
Thank you, Chief. And then the status of the clearing of the overgrown lots.
All right, I've got several overgrown lots. I'll start off with 4 Sand Dollar. The owner's has requested an extension to finish clearing his lot, so he's starting to work on it, and he's asked for an extension, which we'll give it to him. The one at 17 Wills Way, the lot has been cleared. 18 Wills Way, oops, what did I do?
That's Desiree.
Back to it. 18 Wills Way, the letter was received by the owner, but he's trying to play hide and seek with us at this point. we'll eventually get with him. 3903 Cameron, minor overgrowth was observed, and that's pending construction at the location, and that will get cleared up soon too because of the construction. And then unkept lots reported in April, we had 3701 Palm, a letter was sent to the owner, 3706 Palm, a letter was sent to the owner, and 3804 Cameron, a letter was sent to the owner. And we give them 30 days to make a response back. And that's where we're at with our lots.
Thank you. Also under old business, we have the request to leave pedestrian crossing signs up year round.
Go ahead. Lauren. Well, I was just going to say, this is on the agenda at the request of the citizens. As the department's process is now, those pedestrian cross signs, they're portable signs, and they put them out early in the morning, and then in the evening they go around and collect them all. And that's only during the busy season when we have a lot of pedestrians crossing the street. And so we've had some citizen advocacy that those pedestrian crossing signs stay up all year round rather than coming up and down, you know, in the season. And then I think that request also was further for there to be more of those, more pedestrian crossing signs than the ones that we actually do. And I think some of this is a function of, you know, the personnel to take care of it and to monitor them. And I understand they're fairly heavy. I never noted that. I said, oh, can't they just pick them up and fling them in the back of the truck? Well, but they're pretty heavy.
So. They got to be stable when they get on the road.
Since all of this has come up, we've reached out to the SCDOT, and I wrote a memo to Linda about a month and a half ago, telling her about the ones that we did get permits for. If I remember the numbers right, we had five that we got permits for. Of those five, the DOT has said we were allowed to put them out on weekends and holidays, and in the holidays we could stretch that out. You know, like the week of the 4th of July or the week of Memorial Day. But DOT said we could do that. But they would not, and this is where we reached out to them again, but they would not permit us to permanently put them in, attaching them to the road because it causes damage to the road system, and they would not approve that. We reached out to them, and they still maintain that they would not allow that to occur. They don't even want us to consider doing year round because they would deny it, is what they told us.
Mr. Chair, Tommy, thanks for saying that, because, you know, personally, I'm a person who walks a lot, and right now I'm living in my little beachside house, and I have to cross the pedestrian walk over at 22nd Avenue, and I'd say 90% of the people just don't care. I think the island residents will slow down and let you walk across, but it's like y'all are talking on your street. Somebody's going to get hurt. That young lady who came to council last month, she said that the person sped up, and I think she even said she had somebody witness it, you know, and wouldn't know if we were able to get the tag number. But I'd like to see them stay up 7 months out of the year, but you just said that that's not going to happen. But again, I agree with, you know, I think people need to be aware that slow down, let people cross the road.
And let's also remember that there are signs up besides the ones we're putting in the middle of the road. There's one in each direction that indicates, and it's got the signs, the little arrows that point down to it. And I will say the DOT is even taking a position that they would consider if we asked for more. If we started asking for more, they would even come back and say they want to reconsider the other ones that we are putting up. So I'm not going to say that they're not going to approve it and deny the ones that are
reporting. They're telling you don't rock the boat, man.
And if I'm not mistaken, Palm Boulevard has one for each imprinted.
Not each imprinted. Of them. We've got them on, there's five of them.
Five, right.
I'll see if I can get this right. The one at 22nd, the one at 25th, the one at 28th, the one at 34th, and the one at 41st.
I was thinking there was one at 37th.
We're in the process.
In the process.
Okay, we're in the process of getting a street imprint. We've got the permit in place already. We just got to get another bid for the street imprint for the one at 31st to take it from just white lines to an imprinted.
Okay, any other comments? Any other old business? Move on to new business, and under new business, we have the consideration of using Code Red service for notifications to public of important information.
I don't know a whole lot about the Code Red service, other than to tell you that I do note that other local governments have it on their website. I think it works similarly to a reverse 911, maybe, as a you sign up for it, and the local government has the ability to send messaging out on it if there were to be some sort of emergency. And so I didn't know if there was any interest in our pursuing it. I'm guessing there's probably some sort of charge, and I have no idea what kind of expense it would be. Our messaging is being fairly well received now as it is, so I don't know whether or not it's necessary, but an awful lot of local governments do seem to be using it. It'll show up on their splash page of their website, or at least on their public safety page of their website. I don't know if anybody knows more about it than me.
It sounds a little bit like Everbridge.
I think it's similar to the county's Everbridge, but we know that we don't have a lot of people
right
over here signed up for Everbridge.
But if this is an automatic thing, that would probably help. But if you have to sign up, then it's going to have the same,
same problem.
Push Everbridge, because it's already paid for, I believe.
Everbridge is the system that Charleston County Consolidated Dispatch has. If you're not signed up for it, you might want to get signed up, where they push messaging to you. And, of course, if we ever have any real emergency over here, they would push that information out over, and whomever signed up for Everbridge.
I would think perhaps we might want to publicize Everbridge.
It's on our website. Let me see if I can find it. But yes, we do. It does have a presence on the city's website for sign-up.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I was talking with somebody in my office this morning, and he used to live on Sullivan's Island, and he's still in their
Code Red?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, every time there's a vegetable market or an event or anything, they get a text saying, don't forget about this, and it goes out to everybody who's signed up. From Andy Binky, even though he's not personally doing it, it's just an automatic information giving, whether it's a bad problem on the beach or accident someplace, but it's a pretty cool thing.
And I know you're saying it's automatic. I'm wondering how automatic it is.
So could we investigate what Sullivan's Island is sending out?
I think we can do that. Someone's obviously going to have to put that message on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the city would pay for the service, and then I would contact the service and
That's what we would have to find out.
How much is the cost?
Maybe just investigate first.
Because just putting it on the website is not going to...
That's not going to do it.
Yeah, some investigation would be in order.
This sounds similar. Phone calls, text messages, emails, social media, and that's kind of like how Everbridge works. You sign up and you say, priority number one, I want to go straight to my cell phone and be a voice message. Priority number two, I want to be a text message. Priority three, I want it to go to my email. Priority four, home. So you pick the priority. It sounds real similar. So I'll do some digging on
Thank you, Chief.
The Everbridge and look into this, but I have never. I don't know much about it, so I'll be happy to.
Where did we get the information on Code Red? Did someone bring that to you?
I think I just printed it after seeing Code Red on so many of the websites of the local governments.
Okay.
I think I just looked it up.
Well, great. Thank you.
Could we reach out to Andy Binky and ask him what they're doing over there?
They're doing
Code Red.
Code Red,
okay.
Yeah.
I like it for safety things. I don't know if I like it for the farmer's market,
just general
sale,
right,
and the whatever. I mean, I don't want to be inundated with... It seems like I get so many text messages already, but...
But for the safety part, I think it's fabulous.
No, it's a, if it's anything like what I think it's, it is, it's great. And you could even, like if there's a hurricane evacuation notice, you can, you probably don't want messages back from everybody, but you can do a receipt, send receipt, or acknowledge receipt.
Acknowledgement.
And then you can say, okay, 50% of the people got the message and acknowledged it.
Oh, okay.
Could be
okay,
the 50, the other 50 might have got it and didn't acknowledge it. So.
Cool.
Pretty interesting.
That would be good.
So I just looked at theirs. I thought it was code red, but it, and maybe it's the same thing. It looks like it's something called Nixel. And well, that's Everbridge. Same thing. It says Everbridge Nixel, N-I-X-L-E.
We do have the people that are signed up for priority assistance. Some of the, we used to call it special needs and we changed the name. When we get a storm alert or anything significant, we'll send out messages that way. And then usually we have to call and see if they got the message. But I mean, if you accept receipt of it, then we know immediately and we can get a report. Like even if we send a evacuation, I mean, if we send a, say, a storm alert to the fire department and said mandatory recall in 24 hours, acknowledge receipt, something, you can actually see who read it and how well it's, how effective it is.
Great.
You know, I happened by Station 2 the other day, and I was talking to some of the fire personnel down there, and they were saying the number of calls y'all have for missing children. And how people, parents, two parents, would say that the child's wearing a different color something. And if, you know, just a quick message went out there, everybody saying, you know, keep an eye open for this child.
Sure.
I mean, it's so simple,
sure.
And everybody get it. Who's out there on the beach?
Well, some person
might make it easier for y'all.
Well, there's some discussion about coming up with a flyer, and so there's a draft floating around right now that has not, it's not ready to come here, but
okay,
yeah,
cool,
great. Okay, we'll move on to the FY18 CTC project requests. Mm-hmm.
So this comes to you all every year and also goes to the Public Works Department every year. Two of these types of requests come to you. One's from Transportation Sales Tax Committee. They fund similar types of things as CTC. And then there's the County Transportation Committee, which is this source. And so they, while they do resurfacing of roads, they do that on what they call their pavement management system. So this would not be the venue that you would request a road to be resurfaced on, but you can do drainage projects, you can do bicycle paths, improvements such as handicap parking, those kinds of things would be options for improvements. And Desiree, what were the priorities out of Public Works? Do you remember?
So it will be extending the bike lanes from 21st to 57th.
On Palm.
And then the intersection improvements off of the connector.
For bicycles.
For bicycles and pedestrians.
Is this intersection number one, mm-hmm. and then number two is Palm Boulevard?
It's
or
the
is
opposite.
Just
the
opposite.
I would
suggest this,
I
be
think this would
priority
be
priority number one.
I
reads.
Walk up the bridge, there's no way to get off.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're in the traffic.
Right.
Plus, it's going to require less funding. I mean, we seems like we put this 21st to 57th on for years and years and years. And we've never.
Well, and we had the other section on, and now
right.
we have gotten that
right.
Done. So.
But that was in conjunction with the repaving.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So Mr. Chair? May I make a motion that we reverse those two items?
It's only two? They only?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
In the past, we've had phase two drainage, but
right.
we believe
that's funded.
That's funded.
A motion to reverse the two to make the bottom of the bridge more pedestrian and cyclist safety-wise, and then make 21st to 57th number two.
Second.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So we just arm wrestle with the other committee?
We will come before the full council and you can arm wrestle.
Start
yeah.
strengthening them.
I know. Yeah.
I don't know that they were
no,
really vested
right.
in which way.
So. Okay, then we're the discussion of balloons, banning balloons from the beach for environmental safety.
This is Chief Graham's advocacy.
Yes. Right now we're just gathering information, but the more and more I see and hear about the wildlife being injured or murdered, for lack of a better term, from balloons and plastic and string and anything you can think of that can hurt the marine life. Balloons have been discussed on numerous occasions, and people like to fly them from the beach. We do have a mechanism in place that we can keep, say, the Chinese lanterns from going, but the balloons I don't think have been addressed. So whether it was addressed through a special ordinance or just the litter ordinance or something with the beach rules. So right now we're in the gathering information stage, and I called our turtle expert and asked if they had some, I want to get some pictures. And but I do want to add, somehow or another, get balloons to where they're off limits on the beach. And I think this would just, right now the Chinese lanterns, when people call us, we just tell them it's not okay. Right. And for the most part, now if somebody just went out there and lit one off and let it fly away, if we see them, we can stop them. But we do frequently get requests by somebody wanting to have some type of memorial service.
Right.
And so when we hear about the events, we can try to stop them. We're not going to be out there chasing people down
right.
with a balloon. But I think, you know, if somebody wants to do some type of an organized event for memorial or whatever the purpose, we should be able to stop those fairly easily. But right now, there's really nothing on the book saying it's not okay to have a turtle eat a balloon.
Absolutely. I think we're all there.
Yeah, it's a big problem. I mean, there's probably a quarter of the turtles that go to the turtle hospital have plastic and balloons and the balloon strings. You know, you don't think about those. But it's littering. I mean, people don't think about it when because the balloons are so. I remember as a little kid doing it, but it's just litter and it's going to end up in the ocean. And I don't know how exactly we do it. I had Kathy Kent was going to try to come by today because she would be embracing this sort of thing, but she couldn't because she's picking up her daughter right now. Yeah, let's pursue it. Even if just it's part of the sign, no balloon releases.
I think we can tack on to something.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I totally agree. I mean, I'm like Barbara, you know, plastics are every. I mean, I went to the grocery store this morning. I got in my car and I looked down at the number of cigarette butts on the ground. But I don't want to see more laws, but if we can at least try to educate people to, you know, no balloons on the beach, and, you know, just let's take baby steps in the beginning and try to really educate our public about it is environmentally hazardous to our wildlife and our wetlands and everything else. And then if we have to take bigger steps, we can take bigger steps. But I agree. I think something needs to be done.
Just to clarify, I don't mind someone taking a balloon on the beach as long as they take it home.
That's.
I mean, you know, I don't
be,
think
sure
we're not going to have the beach.
Let go.
Right,
it's not
well,
going to get loose. And,
yeah, but we don't want beach services officers rushing up to someone to, you know,
right.
arrest them for their balloon. But it's education. It's litter. I mean,
it's
we
litter.
Really, it's part of the ordinance now. Maybe just education and including it on the signs and getting some publicity about it.
Linda, I was going to ask you, do we have a flyer if someone wants to have a wedding on the beach? Do we have a flyer that we give
what
them
they can
that
do?
Tells what?
No, there's a section on the website that talks about weddings on
okay.
the beach, and when they call City Hall and they ask, we give them some tips
okay.
About what, you know, things they should be concerned about, because, you know, often these are people that are from off and they don't recognize
right.
it's not good to have a wedding
right.
at high tide or do anything to disturb a turtle nest or to be mindful of ants and
yeah.
to be aware that, you know, they can't ask people to move off the beach. So we give them advice and we direct them to the website for information, and we offer, you know, we say if you have any other questions, call us back.
Yeah.
But the biggest piece of advice we give them is that when you leave, it should look just like it looked
just
when you arrived.
It's a plain old beach.
Or it takes up an extra home.
Well, I'll be gathering more information and pictures, and like I said, we might be able to work on tacking this onto something so that we're not creating.
Thank you for spearheading.
Yes, yes, great.
Like maybe
thank
just
you.
Amending something we had already.
Right.
I've got someone you should talk to, so let's talk.
I will tell you, when you mentioned cigarette butts, there is advocacy out there right now among, you know, people that write the city letters and people that write individual council members' letters, but there's some advocacy now for banning smoking from the beach. So, I mean, it could be that, you know, I mean, none of us want to be out there trying to write tickets for, you know, smoking on the beach, but there is some, because of the cigarette butts and also just because of, the unpleasantness of being next to someone who's smoking or smoking a cigar or whatever out on the beach.
I was going to remark, I went to the COG meeting this morning, and as you get out of the parking lot, you walk under behind the columns, and there was a guy standing there smoking, attended the meeting for an hour, hour, 15 minutes, went back. I don't know if he had moved or not, but he was still there smoking. It's like,
well, there are, oh there, boy. There are some beaches in Hawaii and I think in the Northeast that have banned smoking. I don't know. You know, again, it's litter.
Yeah, it's litter. Mm-hmm. And filters last forever.
Yeah, I mean, they do. Years ago, if you're, we did the beach sweep in, what was it, September or whatever. Mm-hmm. And in between, just the front beach, like two blocks, the turtle team picked up 1,000 cigarette butts.
Oh, wow.
Well, it was 998, so I'm exaggerating.
Yeah. We'll let you round up.
But unbelievable. And these are people, if you ask them, I'm sure would say, oh, no, that biodegrades. You know, but it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cigarette part does, but not the filter. No. It's a challenge. Mm.
Okay. Move on to the next item, which is a discussion of sole source approval for Motorola radios.
Okay, so this is before, this is me again. This is before you guys, because since we have adopted the new procurement ordinance, one of, you know, this is true every time you, you know, make new rules, no matter how well you think them out, you discover things that you maybe should have thought about. And one of the things is with our radios, radios are expensive, so almost any time you buy a few or you buy parts like chargers or batteries for, you know, restocking, it will put you over some sort of limit for competitive procurement. And unless the city is prepared to change all of its stock, you know, in other words, completely go to another brand, then it is not practical to put that out on a competitive procurement. So yes, you might be able to find something less expensive, but the, you know, they wouldn't be, the charger wouldn't fit the radio and everything. So so where we have Motorola equipment for replacement parts, for batteries, for chargers, and replacement radios, we really, I'd like for the committee to embrace and for city council to embrace that that is going to be a sole source procurement until such time the city decides to globally change all of its equipment throughout the city. So, you know, I'm kind of running into a problem now. Purchase orders are coming to me. I review them against the new procurement code, and it will hit a toggle for getting competitive pricing. And, of course, I'm going to send that back to the department manager. They're going to try to get a competitive price, but that competitive price is really meaningless because we're not going to go with it because it wouldn't be compatible with the radio. So so I was hoping to get some recommendation from this committee to all of council that so long as we have Motorola radio equipment and we're not changing all of our equipment, that it is okay to go with sole source for Motorola for parts and replacements.
You have all that written down, Marie? So I'll put that in the form second.
Question.
Yes.
Motorola is a pretty big company. Are there not other vendors to sell that could be more competitive?
Chief Graham,
I would be happy to answer that. there are, and even the fire department, we used to have another manufacturer's brand. I'm not going to say any names. I also use another manufacturer's name, different than the one we had elsewhere in what I do when I'm not here. These Motorolas, we've dropped them off of roofs. We've had them run over by fire trucks. We've had them in the ocean. I've been through multiple sets of radio testing with Charleston County where different manufacturers have been allowed to come in and show off their product. As much as they cost, I think it's ridiculous, but it can take a beating and keep on going. And I don't know that too many people can do to a radio what we've done and it still works. Mount Pleasant Fire Department melted the radio and it still worked. Wow. Yeah, and I've dropped mine 3 times out of my truck recently, and there's not a scratch on it. And it wasn't on purpose.
Good to hear.
But, I mean, we were putting up lights on the fire station years ago, and literally the radio fell off the roof, and it landed at the Acme Cantina's parking lot, and it worked just fine.
me personally, as long as I'm here with the city, I'm going to do everything I can to stick with Motorola because it's been proven. It's not going to leave us in a fire. And I just think that it's important that we have the best that we can get.
Yeah. Yep. No, I totally agree to what she says, but are there more vendors that sell Motorola radios?
Oh, no, no. And plus, it's on state purchase. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Just thank you.
Okay.
So, I'm all for your Motorola radios.
Well,
you sold me.
For example, the recreation department is going to a different radio for their operation. And that is fine. They're not working in public in a public safety
right.
arena where they've got to have reliability. They're just talking across a baseball field to one another. You know, so they can go easily to a less expensive, you know, competitively procured radio. But where the public safety application is in effect, then, you know, definitely think that I just want to make sure that we are okay with our procurement code. But at the same time, understanding that unless globally we change public safety altogether,
right.
And because I need to be plugged in to them, I'm going to maintain my Motorola radios that are issued to me as well, even though I'm not directly in the public safety arena.
And you haven't dropped yours off a fire ladder?
I have definitely dropped mine. Of course, mine travels to wet locations as well, and though I try to protect it, sometimes it's, you
right.
know, but... Knock on wood, I've never had one go off.
We all
on
go
service.
Through our
yeah.
yes.
equipment.
Any other discussion? All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
And last item under new business is discussion of kiosks at Breach Inlet.
So this, I think, was brought up maybe at council or ways and means level.
Yeah, I believe it was ways and means.
And was referred, I believe, to back to this committee to for there to be further discussion. And it kind of dovetails into some discussion that that was on the real property agenda as well about methods that the city could use to increase revenue citywide and, you know, to help to meet expenses and keep us from having to raise property taxes. And of course, there's no regulation on the parking down at Breach Inlet, and so the thoughts were that maybe having kiosk operation down there would help to regulate it and also be a source of revenue for the city. There would be an expense as well. I don't want to overshadow that it's an expense to install kiosk, and it's an expense to have the personnel to, you know, do the collections and do the enforcement.
About $13,000 on the machine and the concrete pad.
I got a lot more to add.
Okay.
Chief.
Okay.
Since the discussion the other night, we reached out to DOT and, quote, one of their senior engineering personnel said that as long as it's under the control of the SCDOT, then it will remain a public parking lot and they will not allow kiosks to be installed. However, if the city wishes to take control
right.
of the parking lot, then they will need to approach the DOT about getting that control, and then we would be responsible for the maintenance, signs, the striping, so on and so forth, of having the lot.
Jimmy, go ahead.
You know, Breach Inlet is an historic site. You know, H.L. Huntley launched there back in 1864. People go down there to walk the beach because it's not a swimming beach. They walk the dogs down there. If we start putting kiosks in a location like that, we're going to push those people down to Palm Boulevard in the residential and be walking, you know, more down that way. And then I also look at the number of parking spots. I think there are 11.
11
spaces, and we're talking $14,000 for a kiosk, and then our kiosks stay up how long?
Well, the kiosks
stay up all the time.
They stay up all the time.
Enforcement.
Yeah.
But we charge parking for
a season.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it would take forever to recoup that. It just doesn't make sense for such a small number of parking spaces to put up a kiosk at Breach Inlet. And plus, there's also people who go down there who actually fish for their dinner. I mean, you know, they're fishing off that bridge all the time or crabbing off the beach. So I'm totally against us leading that direction.
I'm up in the air. I think it would pay for itself. I went down there right about lunchtime, and there were 9 cars parked
on
there.
On a Monday. Yeah, Saturday,
right.
Sunday, there were like 24 cars parked.
Right. So.
Or more.
And.
Well, I think the first.
I don't know that we need to do it right now, but I think it's something we need to keep in mind for the future.
Well, obviously, the first thing is the responsibility of taking over the piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how much. I don't know how much the SCDOT is striping and signing, and it looks pretty ramshackle down there. So I don't think they're doing much to keep it up.
But they give it to us cheap.
But they give it to you. Yeah, they'll run over with a piece of paper and hand it to you. But that's the first step. I think we have to see if there's a will to even do that. We keep wanting to do services and things for our population, and we certainly, since I've been on council, have never raised property taxes, but we got to come up, we have to think of some out-of-the-box ways to get some more revenue. I mean, even if we do, costs are going up, retirement, insurance, all the, 80% of our budget that we really have no control over, it's fixed, and we're going to always have to pay it. So I don't want to just cut this out, but I think the first thing is to see if there's a will to even take it on in the first place.
I agree with you. Yeah. I can't see us taking over from SCDOT. There's got to be a reason there. Of course, they want us to take over the roads, and we give us, what, $1 million? $1 million a year for 3 years, and then we're on our own. I guess we'll just kind of keep this on file for long range for public safety.
Are you talking about every month?
No.
Okay.
Long range. We'll move on to the, unless there's any other new business, we'll move on to the highlights of the departmental reports. And Chief Graham, you can start. A busy month, it looks like.
Hello. We are going to jump right in with page 1, call summary. You'll see on the 3rd, we had a reported house fire. It was struck by lightning on Back Bay. Fire crews arrived on scene and determined that the house had been struck by fire, but there was no active, or struck by lightning, but no active fire at the time. They went and secured one of the breakers and told them to have a certified electrician come out and take a look at it. On the 8th, there was an outside fire reported at on Ocean Boulevard. An individual had already put the fire out with a fire extinguisher prior to our arrival, which was great. That helps us. We went out there and made sure that everything was taken care of. Pine straw is extremely flammable, especially in the dry air that we've been having. So on the 13th, we had a dog trapped on a small island in the intercoastal waterway. We went out there, launched one of our boats, and then also had Charleston County Rescue come out and assist us with their airboat getting the dog off of the island. So it was safely reunited with its owner. On the 14th, we had a report of a missing child. Councilmember Carroll reported that these have been on the uptick. So the information that we received from dispatch is that they were last seen on land, which prompts a certain response. So we did multiple beat sweeps. Then that information had changed that they were last seen in the water, which then we started to request additional marine units to come and assist. And the child was found safe at a residence on Ocean Boulevard eating a sandwich. And then reunited with his father. But once again, speaking to that information that was given,
some alert resident noticed that, the child and
right,
took them in.
The information that we were given to find the child, we would have never found the child. So
no, right.
It's important. Some really good information had come out since then about taking a picture of your child prior to going to the beach. So that is very valuable information
pass
on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
In the era of cell phones.
Yeah. Absolutely. So on the 20th, we had a report of an outside fire. We responded to Ensign Court. When we arrived on scene, We saw that there was a fire that appeared to be out of control on Goat Island. We responded with our marine asset to get over there, give us a visual, and to assist in fire suppression activities. Once we got there, we determined that the fire was out of control. We got other marine assets to come over and give us a hand putting the fire out. The fire was extinguished. We got back over here and made contact with the owner as well to let them know to not do that anymore. They had dug a huge pit, a massive pit, and taken everything out of a residence and just lit it on fire.
Really?
And then left. Their neighbors were not very happy.
Yeah, I guess.
So, on the 24th, we had three individuals who were in an inflatable boat, or raft is a good word for it, that started to deflate on the way back from Caper, so we went out there and picked them up and brought their inflatable raft back as well. On the 25th, we assisted a resident with taking water that was taking on water at a dock. The bilge pump had stopped working, so we assisted them doing that as well. On page 3, you'll see our call report, which is 2 pages long. On page 5, we had 104 calls for the month, and that's broken down 57 in District 1, 42 in District 2, and we had 5 that were outside of our jurisdiction, mutual aid calls. That broke down into 47 resident and 57 non-resident, with a total of 44 EMS calls. And those EMS calls broke down to 21 resident and 23 non-resident, and we saw 44 patients for the month. So, while Dunes report on page 6, there are a total of 22 calls, broken down 11 and 11 for resident and non-resident, total of 10 EMS calls, and we saw 10 patients as well. Pages 7 through, I believe it is 13, yep, that's our run times for EMS and for the fire department. Those are all about normal that we've seen over the last couple months. Page 14, you'll see that we've seen 121 patients in 2017. And the supplemental report on page 15, we had numerous smoke detector, station tours. We had some smoke detectors and some public assists this month as well that we'll talk about here shortly. If you look on page 16, we had 104 calls, like I said, which if you look back in 2016 is significantly up from 66 calls last April. So, but is kind of more in line with our 2005 and 2014, so a little bit of an increase. Page 17, we're happy to report that all of our pre-incident surveys are up to date and complete.
That's good.
Page 18, our fire inspection report. Our fire inspector did 12 inspections for the month. On the 10th, he reviewed the fire alarm panel plans for the Palms Hotel. And on the 18th, he met with Wild Dunes about a fireworks event that's planned for May. Page 19 is our training report. You'll see that the average was 35.7 hours for the month of training. And then on page 20, it's a couple of highlights of our training. All personnel received training from the National Fire Protection Agency 1500 Hazardous Communications and Intersection Safety for Emergency Vehicle Operators. That's something that we do every year. All officers receive training in preventing discrimination in the workplace. All of our engineers receive training in dangers of speeding for emergency vehicle operators. And the firefighters receive training in the National Fire Protection Agency forcible entry for structures. We have one of our individuals who completed his Firefighter 2 course. Chief successfully completed her technical rescue course and a logistics base fundamental course. Good job. We had battalion chief, fire inspector, and engineer complete the building construction non-combustible principal course, which is good because they can come back once again and teach that for us as well. So that is important information that keeps coming back to our fire department. Two of our battalion chiefs went to a training officer 101 that was at Goose Creek, and one of our battalion chiefs was the lead instructor as well. And our fire inspector completed an arson certification for fire investigation and the new Fire Chief 2 course as well. Page 21, we had 43,000 gallons for back flushing this month. Once again, on page 22, that's the same. On page 23, a couple of highlights for our maintenance report. Give me 1 second. All right. So a couple of things that you'll note here. On the 31st, we bought some 5 gallon fuel cans. That was for a project that we were working with Engine 1001. That we had to drain the fuel tank to get it cleaned out. That was done, and let's see. These are the big ones. Yeah, I see that. Okay. Thank you. All right, Engine 1 replaced the radiator, and you can see that's a big ticket item for $9,100. And then the tower, we had the waterway rebuilt and tested for leaks, which was $2,000 as well. So. And it was out of service from the end of December to mid-April, Engine 1001. So we're glad to have that back in service.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Chief.
Is everything in service now?
Yes.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
Everything's making sure.
Yes. So you can see for the month, we had a very large number down at the bottom for maintenance.
Radiator.
Apparently, they're expensive.
For a truck like that, yes.
Yeah. And they don't have them in stock. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't have them stock.
Yeah, if you can make one in the backyard, you can make some serious money. On page 24, our personnel report, two of our battalion chiefs met with Dr. Carr, our medical director, and discussed some continuing medical education programs for the department. Two of our battalion chiefs went to the Safety Officer Association meeting. Our fire inspector participated in the Career Vehicle Day held at Philip Simmons Elementary School. Our chief met, attended a meeting at the State Pyrotechnics Board in Columbia. Our chief also went to a multi-jurisdictional LE meeting at the Coast Guard Station. Bless you.
What is LE?
Law enforcement. But it's multi-jurisdictional. An agency.
I know that. Two of our battalion chiefs did promotional testing. They were evaluators at Somerville Fire Department. And
it's a nice compliment.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. To be asked to go out there and be evaluators, absolutely. So page 26, our public relations report. Like we said earlier, we had multiple station tours throughout the month. That is starting to kick back up. You'll see those pretty frequently over the next few months. Let's see, we had B Shift Station 1's crew went to a birthday party at 253 Forest Trail. The party consisted of 12 adults and 11 children. So.
Who was the trap for?
I actually had not read that part right there. So that kind of caught me off guard. Sorry.
Kids were well supervised.
I was going to make a comment, but y'all made it for me. So, anyway, so obviously some more station tours. Station 1 B Shift also went to the Easter egg hunt and went out there with the rec department and assisted. Public relations support, we had Station 1 A Shift crew went to a residence on 31st Avenue to assist a lady getting back in bed. There were no injuries, she just needed assistance getting back in the bed. Also, B Shift Station 1 crew did the same at another address later in the month. And then we had a smoke detector check with a B-Shift Station 1 crew. So in the medical loan closet, one knee wheeler was loaned out for a resident as well, which is good. Page 28, we had 19 uses of our special operation vehicles for the month. Once again, that is something that is going to be picking up. In our overtime report on page 29, you'll see we had 2 pay periods. And once again, due to extended people being out on extended time for sick leave, was the main generation of our overtime for the month. And then on page 30 was a thank you note that was sent out to our battalion chief, thanking them for helping on a call. So that is the report. Any questions?
Questions?
One thing, just for the benefit of our audience out here, the fire department does a great job, and they reduced our ISO rating from a 3 to the best, number 1. So they do a great job.
We have a great chief.
Proud Roar. It's great.
So yeah, that was unanimous applause from the audience. Yeah.
So noted.
Thank you very much. Chief B, we'll let you go ahead and give you a part of your report.
All right, for the month of April, I'm gonna start off on page 3. It's 45 of 59 on the handout. We had an underage drinking party on 31st Avenue. This occurred on April the 8th, a Saturday night. The officers responded. They got down to the house and they saw some noise going on. Somebody, when they got up to the house, they could hear somebody yell, "Shut up, the cops are here."
Dead giveaway.
They start scattering. The one who knows everything said, "Try to tell everybody, relax, I'm 21, I'll take care of it." He's the one who comes to the door, starts speaking to the officers. The officers told him why they were there. He attempted to tell the officers they couldn't be there. Wrong thing to do. And then the subject turned and started running. The officer ran after him. They got into an altercation in the house. They were fighting with each other. The guy actually tried to rip off the officer's badge. He did rip off his name tag. The other officer that was on scene with him, he had to deploy his taser to get him under control. He was placed under arrest, and there was a total of 19 kids at the party. 19 of them were charged with underage possession. And of course, this one, he went to jail for resisting and also the providing to people underage.
He took care of it.
Picking up on that same kind of theme, on April the 22nd, we had a couple on the front beach area. They were disorderly, a little bit too much to drink. The female was yelling, and the officers tried to get her to calm, to no avail. Anyway, they ended up fighting with the female. She started striking the officer. She hit him in the stomach and also in the groin, kicked him. Well, that didn't work out well for her either. Anyway, the guy that was with her, he tries to intervene, and of course, he ends up taking the ride too. So they were both charged.
Oh my gosh.
I'm getting into more pleasant stuff. Personal recognition. I do want to recognize my administrative assistant, Tracy Waldron. Just so you guys know that we had a NCIC, we got audited by both SLED and the FBI. FBI came on site, SLED came on site. They were there a couple weeks before FBI came in. Just so you know that the NCIC system, SLED has to report to FBI. FBI monitors all traffic, and we have to, there's like, got a red book just like this thick that we have to follow their guidelines. Anyway, we went through the whole thing, and there was just one little issue, and we are in the process of getting that fixed. So we had a very good audit, and she was spearheaded the audit, so she worked very hard. We worked about a month and a half trying to get ready for this audit, but it was a very successful audit. Then on April the 3rd, PSC Louise Hardy, she organized and hosted a community meet and greet. Started doing these at the public safety building. At this particular one, we had 15 residents attend, and this one was for the residents between the connector and 25th Avenue. A lot of information was exchanged, and some things that we're doing with that as a result is we'll be setting up some special speed counts, and we've already replaced a speed limit sign that's missing, based upon some of the complaints we've heard. So we've had some good interactions as a result of these, and PFC Hardy has worked really hard to organize the community meet and greets that we've been doing. And then on April the 5th, we had several officers that participated in the teenagers meeting at the IOP Rec Department. They interacted with it and also participated in the line dancing class that they did on that day.
That's a picture.
I didn't get to see it, so. anyway, we had several recruits there that are now in the academy, Josh Phillips and Jonathan Ayer, and Karina Garcia. We also had Sergeant Ambus and Patrolman Forsythe that attended the meeting as well. I go to the next page, page 7, the dispatch report for the month. We had a total of 3,984 calls during the month for the four public safety agencies. Of those 3,984 calls, 2,807 were for the police department. And then at the bottom of the page, you can see how they break down. We had a total of 1,151 service calls, 1,621 patrol requests, and then 35 officer-initiated registration checks. On the next page, page 8, in the month of April, we made 167 traffic stops. Of those traffic stops, 31% resulted in some type of citation being issued. The others received a warning. And we looked down a little further, traffic collisions. We had 14 traffic accidents during the month, compared with 4 during the month of April of 2016. And year to date, we're at 26 accidents so far this year versus 17 last year. Going over to page 10, we had a total of 125 reports written during the month. We're 510 for the year to date. Of that, the burglary calls, we're at 7 for the year versus 3 last year, so we're relatively low. Relatively same with a low number from last year. And then on the next page, which is page 11, we made a total of 58 arrests. Of those 58, 19 were at that one party. And then if you look down at the bottom of the page there, you can see that we had stolen property reported to us of about $109,000 worth of items stolen, and we had one vehicle stolen during the month. We did recover items, almost $2,100 worth of items, and we did recover the one vehicle, which was $8,000. Go over to page, the animal control report on page 13. They wrote 9 tickets during the month. They picked up 16 animals. Of those animals, 11 were dogs, and they picked up 5 others. The 5 others were 2 loons and 3 wood ducks. And then the investigation report on page 14, they worked a total of 12 cases during the month. They closed out 8, carrying over 4 investigations into the month of May. The ones that they closed out, 3 were exceptionally cleared, 1 was unfounded, and 4 administrative were closed. In other words, nothing else could be done with it. The cases, so they're just closed, and if something else develops, then we'll reopen the case. And then the overtime report, we had a total of 462 hours of overtime during the month of April. And then finally, the livability report on the last page. We had a total of 19 calls for noise complaints. Of the 19 calls, we had 9 that were founded, and then we wrote a total of 4 citations for noise violations, and that would be the monthly report if there's any questions.
Thanks, Chief. Any questions?
One question. Go ahead.
Jinx, you owe me a Coke. I have the experience of getting a warning ticket. I was driving, parking on 28th, very carefully looked at the sign that said park 4 feet off and don't park from there to there, but didn't see the sign behind the palm tree that said golf carts only. Now, I had all the time in the world. I wasn't in a hurry. I didn't have little kids with me. It was, you know, no one else around, and I didn't see it. So I can imagine this is going to happen to someone who, there's a spot there, and they're not going to see that sign. Is there any way we could literally take that sign off and put it on the front where it says 4 feet off, so at least people, when they see the one sign, will see it's golf cart parking only?
Problem, we would be better off at doing an angle with those. The problem with putting them up as far as what you're saying, people say, I can park in behind that sign, and they will literally do that. I mean, if there's a way for people to try to stretch that out, they will.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ways they do it.
So if it said golf cart parking where the it says 4 feet off, then a car would be trying to park behind?
Well, I think I'm better off just going down there and yeah, angling the signs.
Okay.
And
Okay. Just a thought, because as I said, I was in no hurry. I wasn't looking to cheat on anything, and I didn't see it.
Yeah, we write a few. I don't know the exact number, but we do write a few in that area.
Yeah.
But it's not a lot. So.
Right. Well, your beach services officer was very polite and explained it to me. And
book him, Dano.
Yeah. And then took me and I don't know what.
Sure.
Just out of a 250% increase in collisions. Is there a particular hot spot that this is happening, or is it everywhere spread out?
Pretty much everywhere. And with the small numbers that we have, when you're talking like in the low 20s like we are, that's not really something that just reaches out and grabs you and says that's a problem. Toward the end of the year when we're get the annual numbers in, I think that gives you a better indication. So, but they're pretty much all over. There'll be accidents in the parking lot over here. There's been a couple on the bridge down like at the intersection. There's been some down in Wild Dunes. So, I mean, they're pretty much over. And it's just really the volume of traffic we're seeing early on in the season.
Since I gave kudos to the fire department, why don't you give kudos for our citizens and audience for the police department and what they achieved.
That was a little...
Yes.
Kudos to the police department.
Thank you.
Kalia.
Police department. Kalia. We did that last
time. I'm talking about the...
Oh. We are a fully certified... We have a fully certified police department. Chief and his team went to Mobile, Alabama last month, and the team that was on site was here in December. We went to Mobile and went before the board. They successfully answered all the questions. We're fully certified. The chief received a special award for being the chief of our highly recognized department for 15 years.
Congratulations.
Nationally accredited.
Nationally accredited.
Yeah. And lastly, the 511 beach camera is up and working again, so use it. It's a handy tool. As you can see right now, we can get on and off the island just fine.
Good to know.
Linda, how about Red 4-inch? We heard.
So today was the day that Comcast Cable was supposed to put in the cable line, which is one of multiple little pieces of things that have to happen to make the camera at rifle range and the connector work, because the goal is to have one at the location here at 14th and Palm, and then also have one at rifle range and the connector, and the camera's there and it's functioning, it's just not operational to be on the system. But it's been a very interesting process, because just today when they were supposed to be on site between 1 and 5, and Laura has been communicating with them from City Hall, because we have to set up the account at City Hall. They, you know, said, well, will there be anybody at the house to meet us? And Laura said, well, there's no house. Do you need just an intersection and a pole and a, you know, and so, you know, there's a lot, it's been kind of a difficult process getting people to do things that they're not accustomed to doing. It's sort of outside of their normal purview, and then, you know, they realized it was a traffic camera, and so we're hopeful that the Comcast connection is going to be made today.
We all know how difficult it is to deal with Comcast and AT&T and everybody else.
Yes, lots of different players out there on that particular camera too. At least this one was pretty much our control and one other entity. But
and while we're doing kudos to the staff for being right on the ball. I didn't know she'd have that much information. Thank you, Linda.
Mm-hmm.
There's no miscellaneous business. Next meeting is scheduled for 2 p.m. Monday, June 5th. Same place.
And just so that the chair is aware, I will be off that day, which is fine. You guys can go ahead with the meeting. I'm not anticipating that there's going to be something unusual coming up at that meeting. Desiree will be here.
Desiree's going to be here.
And both the chiefs.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. So I saw that.
Comcast is over there right now.